Oh,
This is a sound check. Can you hear me? That's good because I can hear myself. So my name is Michael Nystrom, and everybody calls me Mike. And you're, of course, free to call me Mike since you are my friends. This session is about deploying operating system for Hyper-V in System Center Virtual Machine Manager. So because that's the only thing that System Center Virtual Machine Manager can deploy. So if you're in this session to listen to how to deploy VMware or SAN servers, you're going to be very disappointed. We're not going to do that. I do have an accent, and the reason is because I live in Sweden, and everybody that lives in Sweden has an accent. It's called Swedish. I work as a consultant, and I'm a trainer, and I also spend as much time as I can on research, development, testing, playing, and flying around the globe and doing tech eds, and I used to do MMS, but now we just do the tech eds. I've been doing OS deployments forever. Anybody remembers those 8-inch floppies? Yeah, that means you're old. I'm old too, so I've been doing that. And I've been doing both clients and servers, and people go like, "Oh, how do you master both clients and servers?" It's Windows. So it's not a big deal. It's just Windows. I do remember when Windows Server was just an add-on as a floppy. I do love questions. If I don't have the ability to answer all the questions here because we run out of time, because this session actually ends, then you're free to contact me. The easiest way to find me is at Twitter, at Michael_Nystrom, or you can email me, of course. It's going to be the same thing, just a dot and at @TruSec in the end. It's not really hard to find me. Just, search for me. All the scripts that I will present today and all the snippets and stuff will be available, most likely at lunchtime today, at the infamous deploymentbunny.com site. So the agenda is pretty easy. We're going to talk about why we do this, what's the benefit. We're going to talk about how it works. We're going to talk about all the prerequisites you actually need to have. Otherwise, this doesn't work at all. And then we're going to go through a deployment process and see how it works. Now, the benefit of doing this is if you do have System Center Virtual Machine Manager, you do have a System Center environment, and you really want to deploy this Hyper-V host, then you have the basics for it, right? The benefit is that if you need to redeploy a machine, you can, from a central location, redeploy the machine really fast. Well, I can do that using Configuration Manager. Yep. Installing the operating system is not the big thing here. When you do deploy the Hyper-V host, you also need to configure the network and the storage and all the other small items. So even if you do use another deployment solution, you still need to end up configuring everything using Virtual Machine Manager anyhow. Well, I created all my switches using PowerShell. Yes, so the first thing we do is remove them and start over. Because they're not going to be logical switches. They're going to be legacy switches. So even if it's possible to do with other deployment solution, you're going to end up doing about half of it in VMM anyhow, and therefore, I assume that's going to be easier to do it from VMM. They use automation, of course, which means everything is based on PowerShell. So even if we use the UI in Virtual Machine Manager using PowerShell, eventually you're going to end up realizing that you don't need a UI anymore. You can do everything in PowerShell. And since you can do everything around deployment in PowerShell, you can do everything else using the same PowerShell script. That means it's pretty easy to add all the other things, like manual configuration that could be a PowerShell script, adding applications, installing things, adding like the site state configuration manager. It's just a part of the same old script, and you're going to see that script. They use boot from VHD. That is both a benefit because it makes it really easy to deploy the machine. It's fast, but it also gives you headache. It gives you two drives. You're going to see a C drive and a D drive. And you need to be sure that you remove files from the correct drive and store files in the correct drive. And it's going to be like, oh, if I log on to the Hyper-V host, I'm going to see two drives. If you log on to a Hyper-V host, you're doing it incorrectly from the first place. The purpose of having System Center Virtual Machine Manager is to be able to manage and control everything from one location. You never need to log on. But that's not true. You're going to log on anyhow and troubleshoot and do things. So you're going to see those. The only issue we have with boot from VHD is that you cannot do an in-place upgrade. And people complain about that from time to time and say, well, I want to do an in-place upgrade. You're building a Hyper-V cluster with five nodes. What's the point of doing an in-place upgrade? Because what you can do is that after 3 years, that hardware is going to be old anyhow and needs to be replaced. So you build a new one. You move the workload. You're never going to do an in-place upgrade in reality anyhow. Well, I only have one host. Okay, so if you have one host, you don't use System Center. Then you have Hyper-V Manager and a PowerShell script. So this is targeted for large companies and large enterprises. So that covers that. So how does it work? Well, we need a bunch of components. We need a Virtual Machine Manager server. We need a Windows deployment server. We need the target, of course. We're going to need a library server. We need a bunch of scripts. We need a VHD file. And the process is really easy. First of all, we need to make sure that the machine boots up. So we need to configure the physical machine to boot up. And to do that, the server needs to be able to support either IPMI or DCIM or DCM. Most people use IPMI. What is IPMI called in HP? It's called ILO. And in Dell, it's called IDRAC. And if you do a Supermicro, it's called IPMI. So that's pretty easy. We need to make it sure it boots and boots on PIC-C. So it's going to contact the WDS server. The WDS server is going to run a provider. So it's going to be configured. So if you go into the WDS server, you won't see any images. It's pretty much a custom provider, the same as Configuration Manager is using. That means you can't use the same. Config Manager needs to have its own, and Virtual Machine Manager needs to have its own too. Then that machine says, well, this is my GUID number. It doesn't talk with MAC addresses. It says, this is my GUID number. And that GUID number is then sent back to the Virtual Machine Manager server and says, well, you know, I know you. You're supposed to boot on this image. Therefore, it sends back boot on this image. That means that when you do this connection and you have a permanent setting for always boot on PIC-C and you turn off the Virtual Machine Manager server and you try to reboot a host, that's going to wait forever, because it cannot get a policy back. So you really need to have the machines up and running to be able to do that. So I usually set a one-time boot for PIC-C and then turn it off, so it never tries to PIC-C boot the next time. You can do that using PowerShell or command line from the vendors, and I'm going to show you how. So the machine boots up, and then it's going to run something called GCEs, generic command scripts. What is that? Anybody here would like to reset the BIOS, reset the hard drives, make sure that you do really have a RAID 1 configuration? That's command lines from the vendor. That is the commands you run. Or something else. That is prior to that we actually download the VHD file. So the machine doesn't have anything at the moment, and you can play with the hardware. You can even do firmware upgrades, but I do that later on instead. So then it installs Windows, it joins the domain, it enables the Hyper-V role, it actually installs the Virtual Machine Manager agent, and then it comes up and says, I'm done, I'm ready. Now, when that is done, it's actually not really ready, because in reality, you would most likely need to do other configurations too. And that is post-configuration, and I put that in the same script. So here's the prerequisites we have. We need to have profiles, we need to have logical networks, we need to have VM networks, we need to have drivers, image, maybe we need to have WSUS to do the patch management. We also need a bit of luck. Every time you touch physical hardware, it doesn't really, it's a bad thing to have luck. It's a physical machine, it could do whatever it likes. So, demo time. Let's see if I had that. I think, yep, there you go. Now, I'm running remote. I'm running remote back to our data center back home. So this is not a demo environment. This is a live production environment. That means that sometimes when I click, I'm going to wait a couple of seconds so I don't delete a running machine in production, because someone will call me and be very angry. So it's going to take a couple of seconds sometimes. So let's see what we need to have in the beginning. So let's go into the fabric, and to make this work at all, we need to have a Pixie server. Now, a Pixie server is pretty easy. That's a Windows deployment server. You don't need to do anything with it. It's just install the server, add the Windows deployment services role to it, and then you right-click, and then you add. Now, everybody that has ever done any kind of Pixie deployment knows that you need drivers. And if you haven't done Virtual Machine Manager yet, you're going to find out there's a button in the top called Update Windows P Image. And most people really believe that it's doing something. It is. It's actually sending the same image, the default Windows P image, to the Pixie server. But it doesn't add any drivers. So you can hit that button many times, and it will not add any drivers at all. But it's fun. It takes a couple of minutes. So we need to have that. Maybe we need to have an update server too. In many cases, we're going to use Configuration Manager for patch management. I don't do that because I can do that using Virtual Machine Manager. Is it better or worse? It's pretty much the same. It just looks differently. So we add a WSUS server, and you can actually configure it from here. And then in the library, you will have all these nice updates. And these updates, you can create baselines around. So there's my baselines. And a baseline defines what patches that goes into this baseline. And then I can do a scan for compliance, and if my server is out of compliance, I can remediate them. And that automatically puts all the hosts in a maintenance mode. It notified Operation Manager, puts that in maintenance mode and so on, and it moves the virtual machines manually from one host to another host and things like that. So it's not an automated process, it's a semi-automated process. You want to automate it, run it as a PowerShell script and schedule it. Then it's automated. I don't do that. I don't do that for one single reason. If I have 15,000 VMs and something goes bad, I need to work a lot. I don't like that. So I actually do it semi-automatic. We patch our internal network for the fabric domain, because it's isolated, approximately 2 times a year. That's summertime and wintertime, meaning Christmas and midsummer. That's how I spend Christmas Day and so on. So that's one thing you need. You also need to configure the network, and you really need to configure the network. And the network in Virtual Machine Manager, which I wouldn't go too deep in, is a description of your environment. You really need to define all the networks you have, the IP address you have, the ranges you have, the VLANs you have. If this is a giant documentation of your, what you have or what you are building. This takes a bit of time. If you don't have this, it doesn't work at all. In this case, for instance, I have my cloud network, and we have the network for the host management IP pool. So we automatically assign IP addresses from this pool. It's not DHCP. They will have static IP addresses assigned from this pool. But then I can revoke an IP address when the machine goes out of scope and it's not supposed to be used anymore. So if I right-click this, I can actually do properties of that, and we can go into inactive addresses and see here's a bunch of machines that has been deployed before. They are now deleted, so I can remove these IP addresses and put them back in the pool if I want to do that. Can't you use DHCP? Yes, you can, but in reality, you can't. The reason why you can't is because you're going to need a multiple set of networks. You want to use storage spaces together with a cluster. Needs to be on separate networks with separate IP subnets. You want to have a live migration network. Needs to be another IP subnet. So eventually you're going to end up with a bunch of different networks, and you need really need to configure this from the beginning. We also need to configure the networks on top of the networks. That's called the VM networks. The VM networks is the virtual networks on top of the logical networks. This is what the customer is using. But you're also using this, because if you do build software-defined networking, you're going to have a physical machine with a physical network adapter that is teamed with a switch, and then you build a VNIC, the virtual network adapters on top of that. And that is the only reason why we do that is because then I can manage all the network from in Virtual Machine Manager. Otherwise, I need to configure them elsewhere. So we need to build that too. We also need to have a reference image. So if I go into my library and I find stuff, we have VHD files, and I have my physical computer reference image. Now, there's many different ways of creating a reference image. You need to have a VHDX file. You can't use a WIM file. So the easiest task ever is to run the convert a WIM file into a VHDX file. There's a bunch of PowerShell script that does it for you. I have one. There's a bunch of them on Gallery, so you can download them. The problem is that they don't contain any patches. So now you need to run Windows Update on all this machine by doing remediation, and that takes 4, 5, 6 reboots. So now the time from deploying to production is extended by a couple of hours. I prefer to use Microsoft Deployment Toolkit to create my reference image the same way I do for client machine, and I apply the same security patches. However, if you're doing a core server, you don't need PowerShell. Everybody thinks that you need PowerShell on these machines. I don't need PowerShell. I don't need .NET Framework either, because Virtual Machine Manager is using an agent. The agent is communicating with the operating system using WMI. So they're actually accessing the WMI repository directly without going through PowerShell. So you can really have a light one. But if you want to be able to troubleshoot and do manual configuration on the servers, maybe you want to add PowerShell. But that also adds a bunch of patches and more reboots, and you need to patch often because now you have .NET Framework on your host. I don't use the same image as I use for production. When we deploy workload, they have .NET Framework and C++ and all kinds of strange applications, right? I want to have my Hyper-V host as clean as possible. But I want to give you a tip. If you haven't done it and you want to do it the first time, it's like, yeah, I'm going to deploy this. The first image you do is going to be a UI image. That makes it easy for you to log on and verify that everything is correct. When everything works, You just create another one, and you update your template to use the other VHDX file. This time, it's doing a core. If it worked the last time, it should work this time, and now you're deploying core service. So don't start with core service if you haven't done it before, because it's kind of tricky if you're unused to do the core deployment thing. So we have that. We have the Pixie. We have the patch management. We have the networks. We're going to need to have a profile. And we need to have a physical computer profile. Now, the physical computer profile is in the R2 version, you have two of them. We have one for compute and one for store. So you can either deploy compute units, that's Hyper-V hosts, or you can deploy scale-out file servers. That's the two profiles we have. But I have three. Yeah, I do have three. Because you can do it in different ways. Let's open that. Properties. It points to a VHD file. You can either convert it to a fixed size during the deployment, or it's going to be done after. So that checkbox really doesn't matter, because it's going to be now or in 5 minutes. So it's going to take the same amount of time anyhow. It's just a matter of where do you want to do the conversion. The hardware configuration. This is when it becomes interesting. It has a physical NIC, a network adapter, and I have the opportunity to use a CDN. If your hardware supports CDN, you should absolutely enable that. That is consistent device naming. That means that a network adapter always has the same name. If you don't have that, you're forced to use a MAC address to identify. And a MAC address is a unique per server. But if I use a CDN, that network adapter is going to be called Ethernet on that server, and on that server, and on that server. And then you know that the first network adapter, that's going to be the management, and the second one is going to be, so it's easy to connect them. Then you connect them to a logical switch, and you apply a profile to this. And in this case, I decided to do a virtual network. So I added a virtual management network adapter and specified it to be a virtual network adapter on top. And I connect that to my physical NIC, to my switch, and then I apply the quality of services profile and define that this network adapter is defined as a host management adapter, and therefore it needs the following bandwidth to work. And then we define the IP configuration as well. We say, I need you to pick an IP address from the following virtual network, and I allocate a static IP address from the network above. Well, so that's fine, but when you start doing it, it looks like this. And I have so fun when I teach this for customers. They go like, yeah, so how do you check that box? It says, you know, it doesn't work. Okay, so let's add a virtual network adapter. Oh, you can't do that. No, to be able to use a virtual network adapter, you need to add a physical. And on the physical network adapter, you can then connect it. And then you can go back. And then you can say that the management network adapter should be virtualist instead. So it's very simple. To be able to add a virtual network adapter for management, you need to add a physical adapter and convert the management network adapter into a virtual. Perfectly logic, if you... You also need to do this. You need to most likely create an unattended XML file. Otherwise, all the servers end up in the computer OU, and most likely you want to have them in a separate OU for all the Hyper-V hosts. That is a very basic file. You put it in the library, and the only thing it does, it says machine object OU is this location. And yes, you will be able to download these files, so you don't need to remember everything. So that means we are basically done with all the prerequisites. To be able to deploy, we need to configure the hardware. And then we deploy the operating system and configure Hyper-V and all that stuff. And then we have a bunch of OSD post tasks, adding network, adding features and functions maybe. Maybe you want to configure multipath I/O differently. And obvious things, at least for me, I'm using DPM as backup, so I need to install the DPM agent. I'm using Operation Manager, I need to install that too. And then I need to switch it in production. So what the first thing we do is, after the system has been deployed, is that we stop it. We set it in maintenance mode directly. If we don't, the production system, or sorry, the server is actually in production. So if it happens to be in a group, a server group that is used, and you just deployed a server, and you're going to see that, hey, someone is installing a workload on this machine. I'm not done yet here. Can you just stop that? And you try to stop it, and it doesn't work, and then you kill the machine, and then someone gets angry. It's always this angry thing. So how do you deal with all that? Deployment using the UI. There's actually two ways to deploy. You can use the UI. It's kind of possible. At least that's where you start. You need a PowerShell script. Writing a PowerShell script from scratch, well, that takes time. It's easier to use the UI to try to deploy one machine and then copy the script, clean it up, make it work, and then modify it, and then you go on. So how do you deploy these machines from bare metal? Well, let's go to Fabric. And I just need to check which machine I have already done. I actually sent an email this morning and said, I'm going to do a demo at 10 this morning. If you touch anything, I'm going to kill you. They haven't touched anything yet. That's good. So we're going to need to do the following things. Let's go to add resources, Hyper-V hosts, physical computers, do a next. And I'm going to select a runners account. I have a separate account, an IPMI account, which I only use for IPMI. And I also need to add it to the hardware. So you need to log on using iDRAC or ILO or whatever tool you have to set that account up. You could use Smash, and the only reason you use Smash is, of course, that your server supports that, and it's much cooler name. But other than that, it's kind of pointless. It's just another way of doing it. And then you need to, then you can do it in two different ways. It's only one machine, so I can type in the IP address of the ILO, right? I don't do that. Even if I'm just going to do one machine, I'm just going to find an IP address for it. Let's do 42. 42 has 37. I'm going to do an IP range. And the reason why I do this is because it behaves differently. If you do an IP address, the machine will immediately reboot into Pixie. There's no safeguard here. If you type the incorrect IP address, that machine reboots. Like that. It's not a turning it off and, you know, make it nice, shut down. It's like power off, power on. And that's bad if you're running VMs on that. If it's controlled by Virtual Machine Manager, it's going to block you. But it might be another server and you have the same account. If I do an IP range, it's going to scan the machine first and then give me the information that I really need. In this case, I can see a couple of things that makes me believe that this is going to work. I can see that it's an HP. I can see it's a ProLiant 460. I can see the serial number, which means I can verify that this actually is the correct machine. And the most important thing, I can see it has an SMBIOS GUID number. Doesn't all machine have an SMBIOS GUID number? Yeah, they should have. But if you buy a refurbished machine, or if you modify something on the motherboard on an HP server, and even if you do a factory reset, it doesn't add back the product code, the product ID, and the serial number. And in that case, the SMBIOS GUID number will turn out to be zeros only. And that doesn't work, because when it boots up, WDS doesn't like that. Trying to find a machine with no GUID number, couldn't find it, so it doesn't boot. So this is a verification. Now, if I now select that machine and hit next, it's going to reboot. So that was 37. That means we need to go into this lovely web page. No, you can't have my password. You know that the life of an IT pro is actually watching progress bars? Yeah, that's what we do. Yeah. What do you do for a living? I watch progress bars. Is that fun? No. Boot options. One-time boot. And Pixie. You can see that this machine is actually set to a permanent boot for Pixie. And the only reason we have it that way is because we're playing around with these blades. And I just forgot to set this from time to time when we do it manually. So let's do a next on that one. And then we need to define where it's supposed to be located. It's going to be in the R&D group. And then I need to define what kind of profile I would like to apply. And then we wake it up. It's going to do a deep discovery. You can see the GUID number, you can see the IP address, and you can see that I need to configure things here. I need to give it a name. And I need to configure the network adapters, but I can't configure the network adapters until that machine has been booting in Pixie and reporting back the inventory. Because then this dialog box will be populated. Now I only added just one machine. I mean, could I add just a range of machines? Yes, you can deploy an entire chassis or an entire data center with just these clicks. I also need to define a disk. No, I don't need to, but it's a good practice. Here's where you can see that you really have the correct storage drivers. Otherwise, you don't have a disk. And if you don't have a disk, it's kind of hard to install Windows. Now, the only reason I could do this is, of course, because I already populated the Windows P with the correct drivers. And the only way to do that is to add all the drivers to your library and then use a PowerShell script. So here we go, PowerShell script. That's the script to add all the drivers. Let's zoom that in a bit so you can see what's going on. So what we do is that we import the module, we get the server, we create a folder, and I get the Windows PE back. download it, make a folder, copy the image, mount the image. You can do that using PowerShell. I know, it's just an old script. But then, if you want to do things like WMI queries using the generic script command execution, you need to add that. If you want to do PowerShell in Windows PE, you need to add that. And then you also need to add .NET Framework. So this is actually adding components to Windows PE so I can do funny things like repartition and reformatting the hard drive. Otherwise, you can't see anything in those machines. And then we get the driver packages from the library, which are tagged for, in this case, WinPE 5.0. And I didn't invent that name. When you download the integration pack for HP, you get this. It's automatically installing all the drivers. Dell has a similar solution. So both Dell and HP have really good integration with System Center Virtual Machine Manager. So if you have any of those vendors, download these integration kits, install them, and then you get all the drivers and everything you really need to have. And then we just inject them by using AddDriver. But then I have another issue. I want to do the conrep thing from HP to manipulate the hard drive. To do that, I need to have the ILO drivers injected. They are not automatically injected into the image. So they are not going to be in the driver repository that HP delivers. So I have them in another folder and inject those two. And when I'm done, I want to publish it. The button I told you about, Update Windows PE, that's the same thing. The only thing that does is update the existing image. So this is the only way to get the drivers into Windows PE. Should you add every driver you can find? No. If I do that, you're going to kill me if I do that. Right. So now you can see it's coming back to us, and it's ready for deployment. I have my network adapters, and if I extend this just a bit, I can now define that the network should be connected to the Ethernet adapter. I'm going to use the host management classification, connect it. I'm going to use that subnet, and I'm going to obtain an IP address. But what if you really want to define an IP address? You don't want to use the pool. You want to define an IP address within the pool. Let's say that you're deploying 10 machines, and it should be like 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, something like that. Well, then you uncheck this box. And then you type in the IP address. But the IP address must be within the range of the IP pool you created. So you can't just take a random IP address. It needs to be in the pool. And then we could, that's the virtual adapter. Here's the physical one. It says it's connected to the uplink switch. I don't have an IP address because it's going to be a switch. And, of course, here it is. I can see that, yes, that is the correct one because it has the correct MAC address. It's connected. It's a 10 gig. And it's connected to all these things. I really want to have them. Now, it is possible to actually do this. The other four network adapters, I could configure that to be connected to the same. So I can, if I want to, do this. That's connected to the uplink switch, and I want to have that as the... There you go, thank you. To an uplink switch too. That means they will be a team. So now Ethernet and Ethernet 2 is going to be a team. On the team, we're going to create an uplink switch. On the uplink switch, we're going to create the management network adapter. Maybe you want to configure the other ones too. So you want to do those and connect them for an NVGRE network, and I want to do an NVGRE network. So that's going to create all the teams and switches. That's really nice. This doesn't work. I'm kidding. It depends on your network configuration. In many cases, every customer, most customers I have, like the software-defined networking. So every network is just connected to the same network, and then we create virtual network adapters and create VLANs on top of that. That also means that during deployment, these machines get 4 IP addresses. Now, you need to remember, we are using a push configuration method. Virtual Machine Manager is pushing down the configuration, so it really needs to find the machine. It uses DNS. When it starts up, it has 4 network adapters. All these 4 network adapters will be registered in DNS. It takes a while before they are removed, if they ever are, depending on your configuration. And that means we cannot guarantee that we are reaching the machine on an IP address that it actually has. So the most common issue for broken deployments and people giving up and, you know, having issues and I can't make it work is because of this. So I don't do this. I define none. And I deploy the system. But why does it work on the first? Because on the first network adapter we add, it's going to inherit the MAC address. So the virtual network adapter gets the same MAC address as the physical network adapter. Therefore, if it's using DHCP, it's going to inherit the same IP address, of course. So then it's going to keep consistent IP addresses during the deployment. But that means that now when the machine is being deployed and everything is done, now I can modify and update DNS and verify that DNS is actually true. So I communicate with a management IP address, and I can remove all the other ones. And then you can just update the DNS client cache on the VMM server, and then you can configure all the other networks. So it just gives me a break in between deploying the OS and configure the machine to do all these customizations. So when we're done, and we press next, and then we do the view script so I can steal this and modify this. Or just press enter. And it's going to deploy that machine. It doesn't reboot in between, so you don't need to configure Pixie boot next time because it didn't shut down during this wizard. It's just continuing. And this is like watching paint dry, because the only thing that happens now, it's going to deploy the system, which is kind of fun. The only thing that you can see that you most likely cannot see in a traditional system is that it's running something called custom code commands. That is the GCE commands that are running. You couldn't see them in the wizard. You couldn't see them in the UI. You couldn't see them in the... when I was doing the profile. They don't exist there. They only exist using PowerShell. So, how do you do that? Well, if I go into the library, and go to Application Framework, you can see that I have something called Web Deploy and Server App V. That is resources. They exist in a form of being a folder with a .cr in the end. That means that Virtual Machine Manager would classify that as a resource. So if we open that up and go to file location, you're going to see that this is just folders. And in each of every folder, we have a bunch of files. Okay, so that's cool. And if I go to this location, let's see where it is. Oh, it's not there, it's here. You see, I have something else. I have a GCEEPS.cr. So let's open that, open file location. You're going to see that in this folder, I have a PowerShell script. So what happens during deployment is that it's going to download that folder 2D host in a temporary local folder and then run that script within that folder. That's how you configure hardware, RAID controllers, and all, and doing all that stuff. It's going to be in Windows PE, right? So you might need to extend Windows PE. And you also need to be aware of two things. One of them is bad, and the other one is worse. Should we take the worst or the bad one first? Let's do the bad one. The bad one is that you see it, there's a tag file. It's called sevmmrttag.cr. The size of that file is 0 kilobytes by default. And it's a tag file, so Virtual Machine Manager adds it so it recognizes that folder as a resource, custom resource, good. That size is 0 kilobytes. Now, transferring files using bits in Windows PE works as long as the file is not zero. So, as a normal custom resource for an existing operating system, that's not an issue. When you do bare metal, you need to edit it and type something. Otherwise, it's going to say, couldn't download a file. And it takes a while before you figure out that, hey, the size is nothing, so it can't be transferred. That's number one. The other one is it's actually using bits. So I was goofing around and said, you know, let's download the HP ProLiant support pack using a custom resource. That's about 2-point-something gigabyte in size. And I was waiting. And it was like transferring progress, and I was like, okay. And I watched some TV and a movie and two. And it's like, I'm going to keep on waiting. It hadn't copied the files the next day because it's transferred them using bits, one file at a time. And it takes about 10 to 15 seconds between each and every file transfer. So after midnight, it has almost copied all the icon files. So it works when you have a small number of files, like the toolkits for Dell or for HP to configure drives. It's just a bunch of files. Works great. You know, a couple of drivers, perfect. But for larger packages that you want to install, you run them over the network instead. Now, you can still use a custom resource like this, and in that you put a PowerShell script that do a net use to a file share and download it from there. Or you run the command over the network. That works too, right? So we need to be careful what we try to put as custom code in this. In this case, it's just running a PowerShell script and does nothing, actually. It's kind of boring. I'm going to put this as a download too, so you have something to goof around with and play with. It's just adding and attaching to a server and copying a file and nothing fancy than that. You can also run command lines for like cmd.exe if you want to do that. Now, the question is, how do you add them? Well, it's PowerShell. And it should be here. I think it's here. No, it's not there. It's here. Oh, here it is. Let's remove that. So here's how you do it. You get the System Center physical computer profile with a name. You then set and use set of script settings. And this script setting is pretty easy. I'm going to show you another way to extract these, but you can see it's like run this, store the output here, blah, 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 command may reboot, blah, 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 things like that. And I run cmd.exe/c with the run command. And I get the library resource, and then I add the script command to the physical profile and define the executable and the settings and the command parameters and the timeout. It's important that you do the timeout. If it takes 10 minutes to do whatever you need to do, you need to add the 10 minutes to the timeout. Otherwise, it will bail out and say, couldn't do it, and it fails. You also need to specify a deployment order. In what order should this command run? And here's the other one. And here's also CMD.c. And then you might ask, you say, why is that guy dumb? Why doesn't he run PowerShell.exe instead of running CMD.exe/C PowerShell.exe? There's no path to PowerShell.exe. But if you load the command environment, then you have it. So I have been successfully running always CMD.exe and then specify whatever command to run. That is the most natural way to run all these command lines. It always working. And I stopped trying to do the other ways because, you know, I don't have time for that. So how do you know what kind of settings do you have? Well, it's kind of easy. You run the get profile and you get the script command. So if I select this and run that, it's going to give you back the information that says these are the commands that you have hidden inside your compute profile. So this works even if I use a UI to deploy the machine because it's in the profile itself. If you want to remove them because there is something wrong with them, you run this command. You get it, and then you run the remove sc script command, and that will remove the script command from this profile. So you really need to remember that this compute profile really contains these scripts. So before you start throwing away things, because it's easy to create a new one, verify that you don't have any script commands in them. So, doing UI deployment is where most people start. That's fine. After a while, you realize it's kind of boring to be there clicking and selecting and next and foremost waiting till the machine boots up so you can select all the network adapters. Well, then it's PowerShell. And since I'm a trainer and I do try to teach people things, I constantly happen to see people saying, well, you know, I'm not going to learn PowerShell. And I'm just wondering what they're going to do the next couple of years. Because they're not going to work in IT, that's for sure. You really need to learn PowerShell. But you don't need to be a professional. I mean, if I go to Germany, I can't speak German. But I can order a beer in German. It's pretty much what you need to do about PowerShell. You need to be able to perform things. You're not going for the Nobel Prize in PowerShell coding anyhow. Just make it work. If it's nice, it's nice. If it looks awful, it looks awful. But hey, it's working. So just make PowerShell work. Play with it. So let's see how we do that. That's the wrong machine. Let's switch over to the machine I'm at. So when I was doing the deployment a couple of months ago, I started out by doing a copy of the script that is created. And there's a lot of things in that script, and you can modify that. Number one is that I need to define all the settings for each physical machine. And as you can see, that is a settings file. So for each and every server, we have this. Name of the server, domain name. What is the DNS server? What's the name of the VMAM server? What's the host group name? Computer profile, runners account, network. All these different settings for different machine goes into one XML file. Now, I can have one script point to the XML file and redeploy the machine or build machines. And since the only thing that is difference between this machine is the name and IP address, it's basically doing a copy and change that over and over. So you can see I have 43 up here. Here's 41, here's 42, and here's the 50 server. So we read that in. This bunch is reading the information from the XML file and converting it into variables within inside. Do you really need to do that? No, I don't. But this is a very easy way to see that you got all the variables correctly. It's 10 lines of code that you don't need. Uh-huh. Who cares? It doesn't cost anything to save it. I type them out. Oh, you don't need to do that. No, I know, but it's very nice to see something moving on the screen because nothing is happening anyhow. And then I created functions for everything. So, for instance, this one is connecting to the machine and doing basically the same thing as a discovery without doing the deepest discovery because I need a GUID number. So I have the IP address, but I need a GUID number because the machine is going to boot up in WDS using the GUID number. So I need to extract the GUID number. And the GUID number is coming back in the BMC info. I don't need to do the deep discovery because I don't need to define all the MAC addresses because I'm using CDN, so I don't need to do that. Or I already know the MAC addresses because I have the ILO access to the machine, so I don't really need to wait for that. And then we have the deployment. And it's getting all the information from VMM. And then we create the network configuration. And for those of you that are unfamiliar with PowerShell, that is an array. So we get all the network adapters and we put it in this array. And then we feed the installation with that. So for instance, this configuration you can see here, that is actually the physical adapter with the team and the switch and the virtual network adapter on top of that. That's how it looks in PowerShell. It's kind of easier to see it in PowerShell, actually. So we get that, we deploy the machine. But then I told you I want to do other things, like when the machine is done, I want to start maintenance mode. Yes, you really need to start maintenance mode. This maintenance mode means that the machine is out of service, otherwise people can use it. Now, that's not enough. It is still possible for an admin to override it by saying this machine is in maintenance mode. Yes. Do you still want to deploy to it? Yes. I also disable placement. Now it is impossible to do. Because now it's going to be a red box that says you can't do that. Okay. So we do that too. And here's how we install, for instance, the HP tool. And you can see it's actually running the same idea. We're running a script command. It's just that we don't add this script command to the profile. We run it later on. So this is a post custom resource we deploy. Now, I had one problem with this. And this is very strange. It's a job. Okay? So I install and I get a job back. Now, this is going to give me the command prompt directly back. I don't want to have that. I want to wait until this is done, right? Install it, reboot the machine, and fire up again so I can continue installing the next one. And I was like, that has to be really easy. Just, you know, use the PowerShell command and get the job. Well, the job that is created has one ID, and when you ask for it, it has another. So you can never see what ID the job is running. So I was like, okay, how do you fix this? Of course, you cheat. So this part here does the following. I invoke the script command, executable, timeout, all that stuff, right? And then we say, get every job, newest three, where the status is running and the command is the command I typed in. And while that is running, wait. Why do I need to get the three most? Well, it could add another automatic task running behind. So even if you're not adding something, it could be a background discovery task that is running. So it should only be two. Let's get three of them. I was showing this for a customer. He was like, wouldn't it be easier if you just can, you know, get the job number? Yeah. It would. You can add failover clustering by adding or building a failover cluster within Virtual Machine Manager, but maybe you want to add all the command line tools or the UI for it, so you can add it manually, which I do. You can install SNMP, which I need to do to make some of the management pack works. In many cases, when you deploy this, it's going to end up saying, the multipath IO is installed. However, it's not configured. Okay. Thank you. But I want to do that. So what we do is that we run a PowerShell command called update MPIO cclaim hardware, claim hardware. That is the same thing as you do when you go into multipath IO and say, discover SAS and iSCSI. So I do that, so it actually is discovered if I use that feature. So we add that. And then we have the rest of it. So here's a function for initialize compliance check. The machine has been deployed. Everything is configured. Let's see if it's patched. If it's not patched, let's patch it. Let's continue patch it until it's patched and done. You can use other functions for this too, but this is basically what we do. And then we can see we have all the other things. And here we'd have the how to install the DPM agent. Now the DPM agent is kind of tricky because that really needs to have a library resource. Sometimes when you install the DPM agent over the network, it doesn't work the way you're supposed to do. So I create this as a package, download a package, and install the DPM agent. So this is also a resource package. And then we install the SCOM agent. And the SCOM agent, well, to be able to do that, I import the Operation Manager module, and I hand it over to Ops Manager to actually do a push installation of this machine and install the agent to that machine. And that means that machine is done. Here's the ILO script for making sure that that machine is set to Pixie Boot next time. If you have a newer version of the hardware, you can most likely use PowerShell from the vendor. HP has for G7 and above, you can use, for ILO 3 and 4, you can use the native PowerShell command, but this is an ILO 6, I need to use the old one. And then I run all the commands straight up. So that's how we deploy our hosts. So how long did it take for me to make this script work? About 4 months. Playing, goofing, testing, cursing, trying, testing, asking, playing, testing, cursing, even more. I have words that is you know, it doesn't make any sense, but at that time they really did. So it takes time, and what you really need to do, and you need to be able to do, is to get the community's collective knowledge on how to do this. So you need to download these scripts so you don't need to spend 4 months like I did. So how do you run this? Well, it's not really that complicated. Let's change that into... Let's see, it's still deploying. Yep. You can see it's into the enabling Hyper-V. That machine is actually soon done. Let's go to this console. We now have in the fabric R&D 43. Let's do 41. Sorry, not that one. And that is 42. We can do 41. So let's do 41. And let's run it. That is the old rib command, and here you can see. And the fact is that you're not going to see anything else for about 35 minutes, because then the machine is completely done. We set this up for basically every customer that has more than three hosts and are using System Center Virtual Machine Manager. We only ask them one question: are you going to use Hyper-V for an extended time? Yes. Will you buy more host machines? Yes. Would you like to have a solution that can redeploy your host environment? Yes. Would you like to be able to manage it centrally? Yes. Are you smart enough to understand PowerShell? Yes. Well, nobody answered yes on that, but then we set it up. So I think that's pretty much what we do for customers. So we still have a few minutes, and that means I'm able to answering questions. So if you do have any questions, feel free to ask questions. If you don't have any questions, thank you so much for stopping by. I hope this session gave you what you came for, and please fill out the evaluation forms. Thank you.